time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
That.
I've never seen anything like it! Baby Clade!
What is the president doing in our front yard?
Our entire world is in grave danger. I want you to come with me on an expedition.
I'm not my father. He was the explorer.
I know you were just a kid when he went missing. But now, you're all we got.
Mr. Clade,
I'm a huge fan
of
your dad. Do you think you could forge his autograph?
What? Where in the world are we?
Ethan, you brought the dog?
Sorry!
We are clearly in uncharted territory.
Whoa.
Hello, you probably don't understand a word I'm saying.
Of course I understand you.
Huh?
Dad?
Dad?
Grandpa?
I'm a grandpa.
What is this place?
The cliffs are alive, and the waters dissolve the flesh off your bones.
Everything down here is trying to kill us.
Do you mind if I call you Splat?
You just kind of give me Splat vibes.
Ow! I guess I deserve that. Grandpa's awesome!
He is not awesome! You gave me a machete for my birthday?
Classic Jaeger Clade.
I was two.
I'm loving this family reunion, but come on! We got a world to save!
We need you to figure this out, otherwise we're doomed. We are doomed!
Wait, seriously?
No, I'm just messing with you.
Didn't see that coming.
He's the manliest of guys, Jaeger Clade. Searcher Clade, Searcher Clade, joining Pat on every new crusade. Iron will, smaller build, he's the apple from the tree with the thing for botany, Searcher Clade. Rugged mountains rolling, nor raging waters falling in cascades. They're the Clades on their daring escapades. They're the Clades.
Yes, it's the Harry and Meghan song. Oh, maybe not. Maybe it's just an aspect, a little trailer head from Strange World, which was not one of Disney's biggest successes, it has to be said. From a personal point of view, before we hand over to our animation expert in Australia, I would put it as certainly not in the same class as Encanto, and probably a little bit worse than Buzz Lightyear. But there we are. Perhaps we should all just live on the back of a turtle after all. Natasha, your thoughts on this particular one before Richard actually emerges in terms of the whole sequence and so on. Is it a strange world?
Oh, Alex. I was going to say I'm going to have to be really careful of spoilers in this one. So... As
what spoiler might that be then?
Oh gosh, Alex. So yeah, it's Disney's 61st animated movie, and you're right, it was a box office flop. It roughly made about $147 million loss at the box office for Disney. I'm really selling it here, aren't I? But it did become a hit on the street on the Disney Plus streaming service. So whilst it didn't get a load of people out to the cinema, it has been very popular with the home viewing. And I can kind of see why. It is very much a family movie. And I can see why late Sunday afternoon you might just flip this on. So if we nip to the plot, okay. So we start off in this, obviously, fictional world of Avalonia. And you have this wonderful opening sequence, which Alex kindly modeled for us a little bit of, where you have a sort of a flashback story of, you know, Jaeger Clayde. This brave adventurer, this very sort of...
Jaeger Clayde is very much the Richard Fitzwilliams of the strange world, is he not, really?
I feel like Richard just needs that mustache. I feel like Richard could definitely pull off that sort of big, sort of British, like, I don't know, colonial mustache. He needs one. Anyway, so he introduced to Jaeger Clayde, who is very much the personification of toxic masculinity. You also then get introduced to his son, Searcher Clayde. Now, it becomes very apparent, even in the first minute of the story, in the little flashbacks, that maybe being an explorer is not what Searcher really wants to do. And then when he finds these seemingly magical, unique flower species whilst he's trying to explore with his father that sort of change his world, maybe things don't quite go the way that either of them expected. And it results, unfortunately, in Jaeger Clayde going off on his own to conquer the mountains. That is his ambition. Richard seems to be having some technical issues, bless him.
It's all right. You see, this is what happens when we talk about animated movies with Richard. He feels he has to get in on the act, so he starts putting on his camera and does all sorts of crazy things for him. Okay. We can do with literally just him off camera for this particular aspect. I'm sure it'll work. Carry on, Natasha.
So Jaeger goes off on his own, and Searcher, the boy, 15 years old, discovers the plants, and you cut to 25 years later, where suddenly he's this big, renowned farmer. He's discovered this miracle fuel that's fueling their cars, fueling all the electricity, basically the equivalent, I would guess, of coal. And that's kind of where the film is going. It's not very subtle in its analogies throughout.
You've even got the Prime Minister of New Zealand making an appearance. Oh, no, sorry, that wasn't a Jacinda Ardern lookalike from that point of view in terms of the president of the actual country itself.
I tell you what, the theme, that's what I was going to go on to. For all the stick that this sort of movie got, I really, really liked how progressive it was in a way that didn't shove your face in it. Does that make sense? It really felt natural. It's progressive in a number of ways. It was progressive. I loved the way that it just so naturally showed this beautiful communication between the family unit, the main family unit. I think that it was such a healthy, beautiful role model of family communication. I loved, just how they subtly tore down some stereotypes, the toxic masculinity stereotype, the patriarchal male explorer stereotype. There were strong women, but it wasn't pushing it in your face. I loved, you know, the little LGBTQ plus nod that wasn't done in a way that was shoving it in your face again. It just felt very natural, the relationships in this movie. And I think that's really the selling point of it. The visuals, of course, were stunning as well, as you kind of expect from a Disney movie at this day and age. We're used to seeing those really beautiful visuals. Yes, the metaphor throughout was pretty obvious, but you know, I think that it's times of subtlety might be a little bit behind us in terms of this message. So, yeah, if you've got to whack a couple of people over the head with it, why not at this point?
Yeah, you see, this is where we disagree, Natasha, because I'm going to go for a 6.5 out of 10 for this, because we recently reviewed, as Jessica Burtis will confirm, on Resonance Rewind's Tron from 1982, which also had lots of messages in it, but it didn't do it. It did it much more effectively, I feel, than what we actually got with respect to Strange World, which, given, as I say, the backdrop of obviously great music by Henry Jackman, Don Hall, the director, and of course, Ke Nguyen, who was co-director and also put the screenplay together. He'd also been responsible, I think, for another one, which I think had opened up a whole range of discussion with Raya and the Last Dragon. But somehow I feel that I can certainly empathize and sympathize with people who feel actually they don't want the children to be exposed to this particular brand of Disney brainwashing, which actually, I'm also going to say, controversially, probably actually is just all bow down to the pound, shilling and pence sign. I think Disney cynically manipulated their audience by actually pressing these buttons. And that's the reason why actually they had a change in their management and why Bob Iger probably had to return. Because again, apart from Disney Plus, which is where I saw the movie, it hasn't worked. And I think Strange World will kind of sit okay. It's good if you like Jules Verne voyage extraordinaire and you like steampunk and you like aspects relating to that, and it's got quite a nice little touch and a range of things, but it's a 6.5, maybe a 7 if I'm really pushing it. For me, obviously Richard Fitzwilliams doesn't do animated movies, hasn't done one since Zootropolis, so I won't even say if he's being tempted to actually going to see Strange Worlds. But Natasha, what score would you give this?
You see, I don't think that this was as bad as everybody made it out to be. I don't think it deserved as much of the criticism as
it got.
That's
like saying Prince Andrew wasn't actually photoshopped into a picture with a young lady that he never actually met in the first place, and therefore actually paid out of court. I mean, you know, not as bad.
I liked this movie. I liked the way, I liked the relationships of this movie and a lot of the progressiveness that it did show. I would say I don't love it as much as I love Treasure Planet or a classic like Atlantis, but I did think that, you know, for a Sunday afternoon adventure romp, bit Journey to the Center of Earth inspired, I liked it. I would give it quite possibly a 7.5. I would push maybe on the border of an 8. I thought that it was good. I thought that it was good family viewing.
Sarah Huntley, would you be checking out Strange World on the Disney Plus channel, given the opportunity?
No.
And Jessica Burtis, have you already checked this out, or is it one which you think, maybe, maybe not?
You know, I hadn't even heard of this. So I think, I don't know if it was promoted very much, or maybe I'm just living under a rock. No, wasn't. Yeah, I didn't really hear much about it, but I don't think that this is typically like a movie that I would see. I think that I haven't been watching enough animated movies though lately, so maybe I'll try, but I don't know. I think the reviews of it from the little that I've seen kind of tend to go either more very positive or very negative. So I feel like it's a real hit or miss kind of movie.
It polarizes people, but then that's what cinema actually does with respect to light cinema and light scenarios and a whole empire of light, which again has also apparently polarized folk. Sarah Huntley, this, of course, being sited in the same location, Ramsgate, as one of our mutual friends and colleagues, Abigail Olek, was from originally. So this is part and parcel of the whole Ramsgate appearance with, of course, the wonderful world of the cinema being put forward in a kind of cinema paradiso way, where you're actually looking at the magic of the cinema, which is something that film directors seem to be doing more and more of, Steven Spielberg notwithstanding, in terms of that side of things, etc. And is Empire of Light with Olivia Colman, of course, something you're likely to be viewing, or are you waiting for Richard to occupy his chair with his notes to hand and actually deliver his summation of Empire of Light?
Well, this is a definite for me because I adore that bit of the South Coast, Margate, all along there. I've acted actually at the old theatre that was restored there in Margate. So the time setting and the genre will fulfill me anyway, watching all of that. I think probably it's very personal. It's just that would be the time that my parents were youngish, or my grandparents, in that bit of London, England, London, the coast. And Olivia Colman is always fascinating. And I'm a bit of a nostalgic person. I love nostalgia. And I hope the Oracle is not going to disappoint us, but I think this is going to be supreme. That's what I'm hoping.
Really? Yeah. So not just five movies in one, and you probably even go so far as to say it's Sam Mendes' best movie, given it's also part autobiographical, and Sam Mendes actually responsible for Skyfall as well as 1917.
Look around you. This whole place is for people who want to escape. People who don't belong anywhere else.
How do you feel?
I do feel a bit numb, I suppose.
The world is changing.
Wow.
You can't reverse it.
Another world.
Happy New Year!
You can't just give up. Don't let them tell you what you can or can't do. All these people.
I'm the only one who knows the truth, do you understand me? I'm the only one!
Hillary, please open the door.
Here's to the future.
Walking those old scenes.
Here's to getting back up. And here's to coming home.
I think it is, and I think what will come across, I'm hoping, I don't know, I'm just sort of, I'm very excited.
Never try and anticipate Richard Fitzwilliams. He's always going to throw you a curveball when you leave.
I don't know, if we all look at, the viewers can't see, but if we all look at Richard's face, he's not giving anything away.
He's actually doing the equivalent of an MTV music video from the mid-1970s, so heaven only knows what he's going to sound like from this point of view.
But I'm a bit of a gambling person. I'm going to say, I think it could be a 9 or a 10.
Really?
Yes, I wow. do, but let's see what he has to say.
It may be 5 movies in one, so 5 times 2. Richard?
Well, I have to say, I mean, firstly, I hadn't heard of the film, the Disney film that you were discussing earlier, and it was very interesting to hear Natasha's take on it. As you say,
we had to start without you, Richard, because I knew you'd just give spoilers away right from the start. So, you know, this is it.
That is not only provocative, not only grossly unfair, but hideously untrue. And indeed, even you are smiling, which is so rare, you know, you never get this. I mean, it's
he's being naughty because he gave away a spoiler right at the start, Richard. Don't worry.
And also the start, if that was the case, Natasha, he started before, this is the other quirky thing, you start before the time. I was actually on time and you'd begun. So you see, he's full of tricks. But on the subject of tricks and on the subject of Empire of Light, yes, indeed, Alex's reference to Giuseppe Tornatore's a glorious tribute, love letter to the cinema. This is the sort of movie that I had originally hoped this was going to be. I'm a great admirer of Sam Mendes, Road to Perdition, 1917, Revolutionary Road, American Beauty,
Skyfall.
Yes, that's Skyfall was good, and he is a remarkable director. And I mean, setting, you know, a tribute from him, a theatre director predominantly, probably, but I mean, he's equal eminence in both stage and screen. So this was a movie I was really looking forward to. Now, I do have to admit that I'd seen a few headlines that were anything but encouraging. But having said that, I have to say, this is set, most much of it, this is the Ramsgate setting, but much of it is in a cinema in the 1980s. This is the time of Chariots of Fire, because the host its premiere. And Britain is, as Mendes says it, because we see quite a lot of this film from the point of view of a new employee of the cinema, Stephen, played by Michelle Ward. He's Black British and he lives with his mother Delia, who works as a nurse, and there is overt racism throughout this movie and some very disturbing scenes. Having said that, one of the problems with it, and I have to say, I've got to be frank, this was a grave disappointment. You have to empathise with the main characters, and that included Olivia Colman, who plays Hilary Small, a duty manager at the Empire in Margate. And the facts are she's a schizophrenic, and there's little doubt also, we know she's had problems in the past. She has extramarital sex with her boss, Donald Ellis, played by Colin Firth. Then Stephen enters her life when he joins the cinema. Now, one of the problems of this movie, and I mean, I really had to face this over 2 hours. Olivia Colman has a wig, which is constantly disheveled. The wig, if it could talk, would say, I am someone who is deeply unhappy. I am schizophrenic and so forth. I mean no disrespect other than to say it's very disconcerting. She only takes her brush to it once, and that makes absolutely no difference to it at all. Why was I distracted at this? Because I've seen Colman like in Tyrannosaur or in The Favourite, where she can be superb. I've seen her play the Queen, which in my opinion, she was miscast. But here, she presents, and of course it's within the character and the struggles of the characters going through, an image of unrelieved gloom and total misery, and the wig and her perpetually distressed countenance started to irritate me. I didn't, therefore, empathize a great deal with the relationship between her and Stephen, which you must, because it's so central to the movie. And the other problem is that this is a very, very strange thing to say. I never thought I'd say it with a Sam Mendes movie, but there are cliches, that cliche is galore. It's not just the appearance constantly of skinheads and so forth. There were such creatures, and no doubt that was accurate, but it's the way it's handled. For example, when you have Hillary, they host Chariots of Fire, and it's a very big black pie premiere. So she goes to the microphone unscripted and reads her poem, which simply, this doesn't work. But also when she's walking out, she reveals to the wife of the manager that he's been playing around with her and where the condoms are and all the rest of it. That is a sort of scene that is so, so banal. And that it's typical of a movie that, although visually it's perfectly fine, and Michelle Ward, I think he won last year's BAFTA ZE. I think he was, he's very good, very model, chiseled looks. And you've got rather a nice little performance by Toby Jones, who's always good as the sympathetic projectionist. Yes, there are constant scenes in cinema. Yes, the camera travels up to areas that are inhabited now by pigeons and so forth. All of this is supposed to be atmospheric, and all of this is supposed to give a nod to the movies, which we all love. And there's even quite a lot of, Colman's character, Hillary, hasn't watched a movie in the cinema before, and she sees Peter Sellers being there and so forth, but it isn't enough. It really, really isn't enough. This is a movie that is relying, it was a deeply disturbing, must have been a deeply disturbing time if you were fighting racism. But the scenes that deal with that, they aren't subtly put, it isn't subtly handled. The relationship, which is at the heart of this movie, between Stephen and the Colman's schizophrenic character, it simply doesn't move you as it ought to. And the clue to this is perpetual, ceaseless and endless close-ups of Olivia Colman looking unutterably and grotesquely miserable. And I do have to say, Sam Mendes, he hasn't got a hit here. The movie seemed overlong to me as well. I just didn't get very involved in it and involved with his characters as I should have. And above all, it was a problem of not feeling that, yes, sure, it's set in a cinema with everything that implies, and also symbolic of the 80s and how aggressive that was in certain respects. But a movie that had that potential and has this cast and Mendes directing should have done much, much better. And I now see why others felt also that the script failed too.
Well, it's got 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. Jessica, given Richard's fulsome praise there for the wig acting of Olivia Colman, I mean, going out and on the breezy areas of indeed any seaside resort is dangerous at the best of times if you're wearing a hairpiece. But to actually do it whilst full film camera on as well, I think deserves a special BAFTA nomination. But anyway, Jessica, any thoughts for yourself?
think that was very interesting. This is not usually a genre that I gravitate towards. And I think that any movie that deals with mental health, specifically with disorders that tend to be underrepresented or very misrepresented, like schizophrenia, I think that they can either be very good for the representation of that that mental disorder, or they can really hurt it. So I'm curious about how it's really shown in this, because I think that would really that's a big thing that would my thoughts would hinge on. But like I said, it's not typically something that I would watch on my own, but I'm kind of curious to watch it so I can really understand Richard's whole opinions on it fully.
In many ways, five movies in one. You've got the love letter to the cinema, you've got the racial issues, you've got the historical 1980s scenario of a seaside turn, and of course you've got Olivia Colman's mental issue aspects as well. Natasha, one for yourself. Do you think it's going to go down well in Australia?
You see, I watched the trailer for this movie, and granted, watching the trailer, it doesn't give you much of the plot. It doesn't speak to me much of the mental health issues. It doesn't speak to me of, you get the race issues, you get, you know, the love of the cinema, you get a little bit of it. But it's interesting because it kind of hooked you in. And then I heard Rich, and then to hear Richard's sort of description, it's very then off-putting what he's saying, because if like he said, you need to sympathize with the characters. And if you don't sympathize with the characters, you haven't really got a good story. That's the whole point of a story. You're meant to relate to the characters, or not. If you can't relate to the characters, you're meant to want them to succeed or want them to lose or feel something. And if it's very much just shots of her being very deadpan and gloomy all the time, I can't see myself being very much drawn to it. I do second very much what Jessica says. I think that when you're portraying mental health, it's such a sensitive topic. And if it is done well, as she says, it can be very positive. So I would be interesting to see what the reviews would say in regards to that. And that might also hinge on whether or not I want to watch it. At the moment, no, I don't think this is one that's going to sell it for me, unfortunately. Yeah.
Great fireworks, of course. Sarah Huntley, are you devastated now? Are you gutted beyond belief by the fact that Ramsgate appears to have been trashed by Richard?
Great store by Richard. And I was a bit confused. I thought, looking at that bill poster thing in the background, it was going to go back further to the 50s. So I'm sorry, I was wrong there. I think what I'm getting from what Richard said, and I think the girls are agreeing with, is that if the story linked in some way that her health issues were helped by the magic or the fantasy or the energy or the emotion of cinema, that would probably do it for me. And then I'm not sure what the link is to Sam Mendes' personal story. Perhaps his family had mental health issues. I don't know.
His love of cinema, cinema.
Yeah, so you know, Cinema Paradiso is one of my favourite films. It's very sentimental, it's beautiful scenery, and it's an uplifting film because, my golly, did they have, they've got the wall.
What about Kenneth Branagh and Belfast? He also has a love letter to cinema. It's almost the directors have got no originality these days.
I mean, is it not, cinema is a place we go to escape and we go to be somewhere else. So if this film isn't doing that, or explaining that's not helping...
It takes you to Ramsgate.
Yeah, but actually, you know, I know this part, having done flipping tours with... Napalm. Up and down.
Did they tell you where the condoms were, Sarah? This is what we need to know, you know, just to actually break these things down.
Too much information. It's too much information. Please, I wouldn't disclose that kind of thing.
It was just a public information thing, that's all.
Maybe in Eastbourne, not Ramsgate.
Okay.
But I would say that these seaside towns, the other side of it is, if you're filming anything there, like sort of, that's why lots of detective TV things are set. There's a very grim, sinister side to them as well. So given that Richard's told us the storyline and how it is a bit depressing. And I think the other thing is, not sure if this is PC to say, but this week I've been doing some courses with people who all have mental health issues.
I was going to say challenges with wigs could be also a sort of difficult, sensitive topic.
That's making me laugh too. But one of the things I'd say is, if I had the chance to play one of these people I've been working with, one of the things that I found quite difficult on the courses that I was running this week were that people with some people, this is not all, with mental health issues, particular with, you know, bipolar and things, they have the tendency to have a non-reaction to everything, which is what I was working on, helping them relate to other people in a way that brings more energy back. So if Coleman is doing intensive all about me, because that's what the character's like, plus a wig that's coming off,
She has to underline her credentials for a BAFTA award, surely, Sarah.
And she can't laugh at the fact the wig's coming off. Oh. Not like in theatre when a wig piece came off with an actress I was working, you had to go to the wings while she stood there and they put it back in and came back on. I mean, that makes me laugh. But no, I think it will be one for when I've got a lot of ironing to do and it's on TV.
Mm. So, Richard, are you going to go above 5 for this?
I'm afraid I mean, it just, the characters, the dialogue, I just didn't get involved. I felt I should be, and he's a great director. No, I'm going for a 4 because it's not a good film. And one just has, you know, you have to be frank, the scenes were very stilted. It was contrived. It shouldn't have been. Mr. Ward is a good actor. Yes, sure, he did well. But Olivia Colman... No, I didn't.
You've never forgiven her for a portrayal of Her Majesty the Queen, let's be honest, Richard.
Alex, I hope before we run out of time, we can have a proper discussion about Corsage.
Well, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Corsage, and I think we can allow you at least 6 minutes for that. So away you go.
Well, no, but I mean, it's the sort of film that needs more than 6 minutes.
Richard. We are boycotting the BAFTAs because of the refusal the BAFTAs actually had to acknowledge Avatar as the great creative wonderment that it actually should be. So we boycott the BAFTAs on behalf of James Cameron. So take your time with Corsage.
Corsage is... a remarkable film, actually. Austria's always, anyone who's been to Austria will find these endless images. It becomes a bit cloying, I have to say, after a while, of Empress Sisi, the wife in the 19th century of the Austrian Archduke, Emperor Franz Joseph. Franz Joseph is always portrayed as old, which is quite a surprise in this particular movie to see him as relatively youthful. And Sissy, the epitome of beauty. I mean, this is an extraordinary film, especially with the links and it plays on this, which with Diana, I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever, because here, you're looking at 1878. It's a year in the life of the most beloved empress the Austrians have ever had. And the fact that she is so idolized makes it ever more unfortunate that this is an era where she has no say in policy of any sort. She is basically there to represent, she is told. And you have her in a cold, loveless marriage with Franz Joseph, but also someone who is restless, unstable. Undoubtedly, she takes her child or their child out in a very, very possibly cold temperature. And I mean, there's very, very, it's clearly, whether it's her particular waist, the way she stays under water for a while, holding her breath, the way she rides and fences, the way she attempts to become some form of, it's all that she fasts, the sleepless nights, this sort of thing. It is very clear, an extraordinary, really, really a curious creation almost. So on the one hand, there is this very strong feeling that you're dealing with a character played by Vicky Cripps, very exhilarating, complex, demanding, a perfectionist who's also to some extent unstable. There's little doubt of that, and she has her flings, ambiguously represented here. And you've also got visits to hospitals, you've got the fact that she's obsessed by her appearance, as I've mentioned. It's a feminist movie, and this is a movie that also ought to be watched to the end, because there are surprises if you sit through the credits, which you might not otherwise do. Vicky Cripps is absolutely superb as Sissy, and she dominates the film. There's an excellent performance by Florian Tachmeister as Franz Joseph, very convincing. He humanizes the monarch, who's essentially a cold bureaucrat and certainly can't satisfy the needs of his rather undoubtedly extraordinary wife. I mean, the parallels it draws, there's no question that you see almost a 19th century Diana who wants relevance and wants to be of importance to the Austrian people and can't be. But of course, she is as a symbol. She can't be personally in the way that she might help with policy, say, towards a war in Sarajevo or in issues that she sees as meaningful. The brilliance of this film, the way it inhabits its period, the castles, the palaces, the costumes, I mean, the way even the carriages move is fascinating here. And I got very involved in this film. As I say, it is essentially about an individual who was... people worshipped yet didn't understand, and it brings you to come to terms with the rather extraordinary life that she led, and you also come to terms with the proprietorial, the male dominated period, which was so sclerotic. You could see obviously mirrored in some conversations, especially with her son and with others, the way the monarchy was becoming not only out of touch with people, but out of touch with any form of reality, and rather like the Russian monarchy in a sense, but not quite in the same way. And so you've got this superb direction by Murray Kreitzner and a fascinating, albeit somewhat disturbing, portrayal of a central figure who was, as Diana, some of the film is, she came to England quite a bit, and then we see some of that. And I was totally involved in it. I thought it was absolutely remarkable. It's done exceptionally well. And I have to say, here you've got a script that's, again, seems perfect to me. Visually, very, very strong, wonderful evocation of period. And Colin Morgan, just you've mentioned, as George Bay Middleton, who was one of her lovers. As I say, good performance by Florian Tachmeister and a magnificent tour de force by Vicky Cripps as Sissy.
Any problems with bad wig acting at all, or any hairpiece issues that emerged during the making of this 19th century Diana epic?
Absolutely not.
Oh. Natasha, is this one for you?
I'm really excited by this movie. Those people who know me will know that I'm a massive, massive history nerd, as I've probably said on this show many times. I know quite a lot about her life. Her life was very, very tragic in a lot of ways, and I'd be interested to see how that's portrayed. A lot of the mental health issues, a lot of the stuff that she was suffering with, quite rightly, because of the horrible circumstances that she was put under. As Richard said, she is a monarch that is focused on a lot in the media. So I would be interested to see how this one is quite different to how she's before. I believe in the past it's been quite a rose-tinted sort of portrayal of her. So I'll be interested to see to what extent her flaws are revealed in this one. Also be interested to contrast it to the recent Netflix show that's been making a lot of views about her earlier life called The Empress. And that's sort of been based on sort of her original meeting of, you know, Emperor Franz and all of that and the sort of youthful side of things. So to parallel the two sort of side by side, the sort of youthful moments with this one, which is much more obviously towards the later end of the marriage where it's all gone kind of stale, will be an interesting kind of paradox. Yeah, definitely one for me. Very excited to see it.
And Jessica Burtis, one for yourself, given that Richard is doubtless going to give this a 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wanted to see this, but especially considering Richard's glowing review, I likewise, I think that Empress Sissy is one of the most interesting kind of figures of that era. And I think that there's too much I want to say with her about her for the time. But I just think that her entire life is so interesting, considering who she was during when she was born. And I think she's just a very unusual person, or maybe it's just because her life was a bit more documented, or both. So I think that she's someone who deserves a lot of the media attention that she gets, because I think that there's something about her life that can resonate a lot with us, even though we didn't have to deal with how she was born and the things that she had to go through. But there is like a fun fact is that there's still a perfume that's made in Europe that she actually had. So you can still buy the perfume and smell like an empress.
Well, Sarah, I know you've always smelled like an empress to me. Too much information. But any additional thoughts you'd like to make? Is this one for yourself?
Yes, quite fascinated by it. And I'm not such a good historian at all as Natasha, but I do find it fascinating in a film like this that you get yourself lost completely in what their life was like and the time. And I've watched the trailer and it does seem quite captivating. So yes, I would be, I think it's one of those characters that you hear a lot about, and there's lots of takes on what her life was actually like, as opposed to the romanticism, perhaps, or the tale-telling that goes around it. So I'll be very interested. Really
presumably
interested.
Just as when we're in the year 2123, we'll be looking back at the 20th century Diana and saying lots of takes on that particular life as well. But that's another one. that, as we say, we are keeping our Avatar, because Avatar needs to be celebrated and not boycotted. Boycott the BAFTAs because of their complete sort of refusal to nominate Avatar for many of the main categories. It's true, Richard. It's a shocking.
Can't be serious. We have to deal with the BAFTAs. I suggest we deal with the BAFTAs next week.
Well, we'll have to wait and see whether our industrial regulations have allowed that. But for now, for Jessica Burtis, Natasha Wanton, Sarah Huntley and Richard Fitzwilliams, a huge thanks. We moved from Strange World. We're moving back to Strange World with Henry Jackman. More music from that via, of course, Empire of Light through the Corsage, which I think was probably the sole winner this week in terms of the general routine, because obviously Strange World, despite the turtle and the other sort of aspects, just didn't quite make it, and nor did Empire of Light. For the moment, keep watching the movies.
Thank you.